Bienvenidos a otro episodio más de Techcasteros. Esta vez les traemos un invitado llamado Robert Colvin, que nos hablará un poco sobre su experiencia en la criptomoneda y el blockchain. Todo este episodio estará en inglés.
Okay, hi, hello everyone. This is our fourth episode of Hola. Techcasteros. We have special guest Robert Colvin, VP of several endeavors in software, very knowledgeable in blockchain and cryptocurrency. So that's what we're going to talk about today. We also have Uriel Bravo and Cedrino Herrera co-hosting with me. And we would like to ask Robert, try to understand, you know, this new crypto and decentralized world, how you know, some of the aspects and what things we should be thinking about for the future of the web, of the interwebs.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so maybe I guess I'll open up with a question about blockchain. So very simple question, like what is the blockchain?
Yeah, so blockchain is really a descendant of the old peer-to-peer architectures that we saw from Casa or Morpheus or Napster, or some of these early on social peer-to-peer applications that were used to share music and then videos and then other types of videos, you know, that we might have watched. It's not really new technology. It's sort of just morphed with better encryption, with a lot of other things that happened based on the limitations that were brought about. And you could think of something like Pirate Bay and some of these other underground peer-to-peer solutions that people try to get videos from. And for a long period of time, and still today, there was a huge effort by the media companies, like music companies and, you know, Sony and some of these other guys, Paramount, trying to create hurdles or problems or put pressure on ISP, internet service providers like Comcast and others, to stop you from downloading copyrighted, you know, movies or music. And I think, you know, it started with Napster, where they really went down hard on people that were pulling files and saving them locally. And then later it became, you know, Comcast, some people, I remember about 10 years ago, would get letters saying that, please stop, you know, we know that you're downloading files from the internet, please stop doing it, because those are copyrighted files. And so to that extent, they started getting smarter about it. You know, like encrypting the content, encoding the content so that they didn't know what was getting downloaded. And then the streaming services that came out, you know, that followed, I forget the name, but there's an Android, a set of Android solutions you can use for streaming content, even though it's supposedly, you know, illegal. So the blockchain itself kind of came from that direction, in a more encrypted and compressed form. And now we're looking at the possibility of building applications on the blockchain. Each one of the blocks in a blockchain has a limit set of bytes. And they're basically put together by miners. Miners validate that the block should be added to the blockchain. And when it's done, it's immutable, right? You can't change anything once it's added. As long as there's a consensus before it's added, then it's added, blah, blah, blah. And then if there's a problem with any one of the blocks, like if they added it without the consensus, there's usually a self-defense trigger where the majority of the miners will reject that block if it's added. So for all intents and purposes, a block is just a space in memory.
Okay, you mentioned like consensus. So how does that sort of like, how does that work?
Depends on the blockchain, and it depends on what part of the algorithm you're talking about. But for the most part, there are proof of work and proof of stake consensus. Those are the main ones that, you know, people talk about. Proof of work is the one where you need a very powerful machine. You know, like the ones that they talk about for Bitcoin, and you need a majority consensus. In other words, the majority of the machines that are online have to agree on your block before it's added. That's why there's a huge delay before any transaction can take place on something like Bitcoin, because it needs to wait for all of those miners to agree before it's added. That's a proof of work consensus, right? A proof of stake, which is what a lot of these blockchains are going to, and Ethereum is moving towards Ethereum 2.0, which is really going to be more of a merge of Ethereum 1 and Ethereum 2. But for the most part, Ethereum, this next iteration of Ethereum is proof of stake, and proof of stake is using a different type of consensus, where it's trying to, instead of having to wait for, 51% of the machines to agree, it is now using a weighted governance or voting system. So those people that have, or those miners that have the majority share of the network. So to stake, you need to put a certain amount of a specific token in the balance, so to speak, or locked in. And once you do, you have a weight based on how many tokens you have. So as long as the majority of tokens in a network are willing to agree that that next block is valid, then that will allow that block to get written to the blockchain. And that's proof of stake consensus, basically.
Okay, the proof of stake consensus didn't sound as much as peer-to-peer or as much as decentralized as the proof of work, right?
Well, I my answer is much shorter than it probably should be, because it's not that simple. There's a lot of other requirements that it needs to meet before going in. So yeah, on the surface, it looks like it's not as decentralized as a proof of work, but the reality is it's going to probably be just as much or more decentralized as the 51%, especially since, you could argue that the first Bitcoin owners still own the majority share of Bitcoins that exist, right? And so there is some pooling around. That's the wrong statement. The miners that first came online, they have more miners than most of anybody else, because they made more money in the beginning to be able to fund it. The new ones that come online need a huge amount of investment to come to get their systems online. So you see some consolidating of miners that, many of these warehouses are owned by one company, versus something like proof of stake, you can run it on a Raspberry Pi, so obviously the hardware needed to run these things is much simpler and easier than a proof of work. So you get a different kind of person involved in the proof of stake than you would with proof of work. Obviously, if you have more coin, you have more weight, but in a way it allows more participants that wouldn't be as wealthy into that market.
Yeah, I got it now. Thank you.
Yeah.
Also, you mentioned something related to the principles of peer-to-peer, and also you mentioned the torrent, the torrent network as a base for the new blockchain. So, in order to be clear about this, is you can have. Well, there will be out there many, many blockchain networks which have their own protocols, their own open systems, and all of their networks only speak to them in that network only. So blockchains don't talk to each other, right?
Well, that's interesting because there's a lot of projects that are trying to do side chains. So there are like level one and level two. Level one is the core blockchain components that make it work. You know, like the mechanisms like consensus algorithms, those kind of things are usually on the level one, right, of the blockchain, the core of the blockchain. Level two are potentially applications that run alongside of the blockchain, not necessarily in the blockchain, but, you know, have different hooks into the blockchain to allow you to do things that you couldn't do on the regular blockchain. For example, number of transactions per second. You know, Ethereum, for example, right now, I think is around 15 transactions per second, right? Bitcoin's not much better than that, you know? So for them to get around that, they have level two applications that can run much faster or use a different sets of protocols and then hook back into the blockchain. So with that said, level two are usually related to a specific blockchain. However, there are many projects like ThorChain, which are looking at the capabilities of interoperability between chains and doing so without wrapping the coin. Like Uniswap and SushiSwap, they actually just wrap a contract around the token. So, you know, in a way, you don't really still own it directly. You are owner of that contract, and that contract says that you own that coin, you know, but you don't actually own it directly, if that makes sense. So the contract itself is the owner, and you're the owner of the contract.
Okay, so being every block like a part of memory, just a valid part of memory, could we say like to the public that a blockchain will be like a huge hard disk share between people?
Yep. Okay. Yep. It's not just that, but between people under a certain set of rules, right? And whatever blockchain right. you're on have different rules. You know, that's what makes them unique because their objective is very specific. You know, some objectives is very much financially based. And then there's others that are trying to do something with it, like CryptoKitties, you know?
Yeah. When you say objective, it means that every block can mean something. Like for some blockchains, every block, it means a coin. For other blocks, for other blockchains, every block, it means, could mean a piece of art or something else.
Well, it's more like objective. What is the grand vision of that specific cryptocurrency, you know, with an underlying blockchain, right? The blockchain being the engine. And then what is that engine trying to do? Is it, you know, you could think of an engine that's a car that drives on a road, and you could be engine on a boat that goes through the water. So their objective is to be the best water boat or to be the best car or to be a train or to be a truck. So in those variances, you get blockchains that have specific objectives that it's trying to achieve. Right now you see a lot of DeFi. DeFi is a big thing right now. So the objectives for a lot of these new blockchains that are coming out are specific to their ability to allow trading or to help move people across liquidity, you know, different liquidity pools, or even work between different strategies, you know, and then provide some sort of value around those strategies. Another one is like Helium, for example. Helium is a blockchain specific to internet and IoT, and its main thing is to create its own network that's basically kind of free. And so people that provide the network or provide internet access get paid a certain amount based on kilobytes transferred, you know, and your positioning and some other algorithms within Helium.
Okay, so objective is more like a political stuff.
Yeah,
like I wouldn't say political goal.
Yeah, I wouldn't say political. I would say it's more
mission
Yeah, it's more, it's just more like what kind of result is it looking to get, you know? And Helium, for example, its main goal is to just have internet everywhere for anyone, right? So its objective is internet. Some objective is to provide liquidation, or the other's objective might be to have a stable coin like a DAI, you know, so that you have a way of getting out of your position into a fiat being a peso or a dollar or real or euro. So, you know, there's stable coins that are one-to-one with those to make it easy for you to move out of your positions in a specific cryptocurrency. You know, and so there are those blockchains you might, you know, some of them don't even run on their own blockchain. They just run on a contract on existing blockchain. Like Ethereum is a very common one where a lot of people build upon. But you have Ethereum, you have Solana, and a host of other potential blockchains that you can use. And then there's side chains like Polygon, which you can build on there as well. So lots of options.
Let me ask you about the perceived value of crypto coins. I still don't understand, you know, maybe you can help me understand why Bitcoin is so valuable in the market. Is it still like speculative, or is there some real value behind Bitcoin and, you know, Ethereum or whichever other coin that's out there?
There's only going to be around 21 million coins total. So there's a, you know, any market, there's supply and demand. And based on your supply and demand, you will get a valuation, right? I mean, you have the even stupid things like in the late 70s, you had these pet rocks that people got for their kids. You know, it was just a rock that's painted. And there wasn't enough of them in the market, and the price started to shoot up. So if you got too much demand and not enough supply, the price is going to go up, right? Right now, there's only 18 million have been found. So, you know, we only have a few million away before there's no more Bitcoin that can be found. It's all going to be circulated at that cap at 21 something million coins. So here's the thing. Valuation is really whatever you want it to be. I mean, it's been that way since the very beginning. Whether you talk about gold or you talk about the dollar or anything else, it's whatever people are willing to pay for it, right?
It still follows the sort of the laws of supply and supply and demand.
Yeah, I mean, Bitcoin is no different. I mean, you know, you think about gold. Gold's a really easy one to understand because you're like, okay, well, it takes a long time to find gold, right? And it takes a lot of effort and all energy. You have to have all these tractors, potentially need dynamite to blow up, you know, rocks in the way. And like, there's all this energy that goes into finding gold. And that's why the valuation, because it's just not, it's a rare element. So it's going to be more expensive. Bitcoin is not very much different. The amount of energy you guys probably already know is being on the news that's required to find this the next coin. So if you think about how much energy is required to find a coin and, you know, try and correlate that to gold, I don't think you're going to see a huge difference. So it's just as a rare commodity. It's just a virtually rare commodity versus a physical rare commodity. But the utility of Bitcoin is many, many times greater than that of gold, because, you know, most people have positions in gold that's like a record. It's not even, they don't even have the actual gold on them, the gold that they own, you know, because it's just
all in Fort Knox or somewhere. Yeah.
Right. But yeah. Even so, it's a very difficult possession to have.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it weighs a lot. It takes, if you're very rich, you can't just simply just put it in the truck and then drive it to your next location. You know, it's very easy to steal. Governments have done it in the past. I mean, look at World War II. You know, the Germans just took everyone's gold. So it's very much related to a war It's related to crime. It's related to all these other things that you've seen in the hundreds of years that gold has been present within our society. Bitcoin is bringing the same valuation or greater valuation, but in a totally different package because it's easily transferable, right? It's you can take it with you. Basically, just take your wallet. You know, it's encrypted. It's going to just increase in value because it's going to run out, and there's just only more people are going to come into the market. So the valuation of Bitcoin is obviously just going to grow.
A question regarding the validation of Bitcoin. When you are going to validate an amount of gold, you can take a piece randomly and run some tests on that piece of gold. You will probably have to scratch it a little bit in order to check if that's a valid gold.
Yeah.
How can you validate a block of Bitcoin without actually using it?
Yeah, so the way it's done is every coin, every Bitcoin that exists and has been mined is not doesn't become a coin until it's being validated across all miners. And it's a very difficult mathematical calculation to find the coin, but it's a very easy calculation to validate it. Think of it as like...
Yeah, but how is it transferable if it's already validated? Where is it used?
Yeah, so it's never... Think of it as a reverse of ownership. You have basically you tag your that specific hash, which is the Bitcoin, with your wallet. Whenever you move... Hold on a second. Whenever you move... a Bitcoin from one person to the next, all you're doing is changing the wallet that's tied to that Bitcoin to that next person. But the Bitcoin has already been validated, right? So it's a stationary hash. What's moving is the wallet, not the Bitcoin. You know, sort of like the Matrix thing. It's not the spoon that's bending, it's you.
Okay. Yeah, I got it now. So the mathematical operation of transferring a Bitcoin is to change wallets only.
Yes.
That's it. Okay.
That's it. So once the Bitcoin's found, it's always going to be part of the blockchain.
So Bitcoin, the Bitcoin change, it's a place where you can have infinite wallets, but a limited number of Bitcoins.
Correct. Yes.
Cool.
Uriel, do you want to ask something?
Well, yeah, I have a question. I want to take a step back and do a more general question. It seems that it seems in on paper, this blockchain and all this seems pretty cool, right? Because we basically remove the middleman and remove the banks and stuff, and well, using this peer-to-peer system. But it also seems like kind of feels like going back to the Wild West, to free for all, where everyone, or maybe not just everyone, but everything can make transactions. How do we handle that?
Let me see if I understand the question. So it's sort of like the Wild West, and we can have a transaction for anything. Is that kind of...
Yeah, basically, my concern is that it's a decentralized system, right?
Yes.
So that means everyone can make transactions and there's no restrictions.
Right. So, well, there is restrictions. There's restrictions on the blockchain itself. Just like I only mentioned consensus algorithms specific to, you know, validating what gets added to a block via the miners, right? And we are talking about proof of stake versus proof of work, but there's all kinds of other algorithms to take care of other kinds of things. So, you know, as far as trading goes and everything else, there's really so many different options. There's like, I don't know, 2,000, more than 2,000 coins out there that are considered legitimate coins and cryptocurrencies. And all of them have different flavors or different capabilities that they sort of promote as being unique to them. Why you should use them versus another. But the idea is, a part of the reason why it's kind of the Wild West right now is because I think it's still in its very antithesis, you know, of this entire market. And I've been saying this for quite some time. To me, you know, I was around back in 97 all the way to 2000 when the internet first came up. And this is, to me, feels like deja vu. Like we're in the same kind of situation we were back then. And people are still trying to figure it out, you know, and there's people losing their shirts, you know, they're getting in the wrong projects, or, you know, the projects look good and you don't know any better, you know, like it, like I said, it's still, this is still baby steps. And the part you talked about is more related to DeFi, you know, decentralized finance, where it's replacing banks and things like that. That only just really started kicking up in probably after 2018. And then, you know, you got real attention just this last year in 2020. So you're talking about a couple of years, you know, but in those couple of years, the amount of innovation in this area has been astronomical. Like the capabilities that this new DeFi space has brought is something that I think in a way has been needed for quite some time. You know, if you look at music, has been completely transformed. Watching video has been completely transformed, right? You've got Netflix that completely changed our market as far as video goes. Obviously, internet with, you know, shopping on Amazon and all these other things completely revolutionized the way we do things. Even cloud computing, right? We went from going from data centers to just paying a service on these different cloud providers, whether it's Amazon or Azure or Google. You know, you have several options there, but that's pretty big steps that have taken place. However, financial hasn't changed at all, really, very little. And, you know, you look at, you try and do a wire transfer between one country and the next, you're using, most of them are still using SWIFT, you know. You know,
it's terrible. It's slow and efficient. It's terrible.
It's slow and efficient, and it's a direct reflection of the entire financial market, really. You know, their idea of innovation is being able to give you a picture of a check that you just deposited at an ATM machine. That to them is cool. You know, that's probably the only innovation we've seen in the last, like, you know, 50 years is, hey, look, I just deposited a check in an ATM machine and it gave me this picture of my check, you know, or taking a picture with your phone of your check to deposit it. That's probably the extent of it. But all the background mechanisms are all the same. None of them have changed, you know. So the way that banks talk to each other is horrible. The fact that you've got this entire vertical to validate transactions still, you know, even with SWIFT, what happens is they have like a basically a full spreadsheet of all the transactions they want to make, and it goes through somebody's door. Some banks have automated it, some haven't, you know, and they basically do a quick eyeball check and they're like, yeah, it looks right, okay, and then let those transactions go through. You know, it's just insanely backwards.
Yeah, I'm still amazed that they still ask for your signature. You know, you have to sign this paper, you know.
Yeah, that's another thing.
We're in the digital age, you know. How many years now?
Right. No, well, let's 90s. Don't even get me started on, you know, assets, right? If you own a house, you have a paper that you signed somewhere that says that you own that house. It's in a centralized location, which means it can be forged, right?
Yeah.
With the blockchain, that all goes away because I can create a contract and it's being validated by hundreds, if not hundreds of thousands of servers all over the planet that this is a valid transaction. And once that's done, it can't be altered or changed. It's immutable, you know? So there's a tsunami of changes in the financial area that I think is just gonna be, for the average person that hasn't looked at this at all, is gonna be mind blowing. And for to a certain degree, it's just going to make everyone's experience better, right? Transactions are going to happen faster. They're going to be cheaper because there's no middleman.
Right. Yeah.
Your ability to get loans are going to get better because it doesn't matter anymore what zip code you live in or anything. The blockchain doesn't give a shit.
That's the whole point. It's decentralized.
Yeah, it just fulfills certain criteria of the blockchain itself, the rules, and you get what you need to get. That's how it's going to work. And then we get to more complex things, you know, like rolling back a transaction, you know, which is impossible with a bank, right? So there's something called a flash loan. And with a flash loan, it's a loan that happens instantaneously. So for example, I can take out a loan across multiple liquidity pools, depending on how much is in each pool. Let's say I can do a $15 million loan with zero down. No money. I don't have to get any collateral, nothing. I can get that loan and then I can do maybe an arbitrage between, you know, exchanges or pools. If one exchange is offering a coin for 50 cents and the other one is offering it for a dollar, I can go and do an arbitrage across that pool, buy it for 50 cents and sell it for a dollar. I just made 50 cents on each coin, right? And as long as I pay back that original loan, I can get away with it. I can walk around with hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars from those transactions. And that's happened in the past. There's several articles where people have done this. It's gotten more difficult, right? Because they're now have provisions in place to make those kind of arbitrage and not as easy, but it just happened recently and partly because of Titan went down and there was a combination of different problems, but one of them was arbitrage, where it couldn't create the stability because it was a stable coin, a pegged at $1, and it kept dropping because people were getting out of their positions, and these were on different liquidity pools. So some pools were got back to a pegged at a dollar, and at which point it's balanced out, but the other ones were still below a dollar. So, you know, obviously people were buying and then selling it back to the other liquidity pool. You know, it's a race to the bottom kind of thing. But, you know, you can't do that with a bank. And then what happens is if the transaction doesn't work, if you fail to pay back your money, the entire process is controlled Z'd. Like you can't do that with a bank, you know? You control Z the entire transaction. Everybody gets their money
undo,
back.
Undo, yeah.
It's an undo, yeah. It's impossible to do it with a bank, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty interesting stuff. Where do you think, you know, what's the next potential step? Like right now we're talking about DeFi, you know, decentralized finance. But what other, you know, applications you see coming our way?
I think that the, you know, as the transaction rates get better, Ethereum's trying to hit some sort of like cap, or not cap, but let's call it the next phase of Ethereum is targeting 100,000 transactions per second, right? Right now it's 15 transactions per second. So you can see that's a huge difference. And moving away from proof of work and proof of stake, they can also reduce the cost of these transactions. So, you know, right now, let me see. Right now, it's cheap right now. It's 75 cents, basically, for a fast transaction and 28 cents for a slow one, which is not bad. But the price a month ago was like $40, you know, because there was so many people trying to do transaction on Ethereum, it got slowed down. So the cheaper the transactions get and the faster that they are, the more capabilities you're going to start to see on the blockchain. And you see some of those already because it wasn't that expensive in November, right? I think in November it was around $600. So the price for transactions were much cheaper back then. And, you know, obviously as the price is down, you see more development on the platform. But for all intents and purposes, you can go onto Ethereum blockchain and you can read all the contracts because it's all transparent. It's all visible to the public. And that reminds me a lot of the early days of the internet when you could go and see people's HTML code that they wrote. You know, you see something cool, you're like, oh, let me see how they did that. You can go to the source and you could read how they built it. And that's exactly how Ethereum works. You can go and see how these contracts were built. So you can essentially get the engine of the application. Whereas now you see a lot more division in applications, right? It's kind of moving towards more front end with things like React and everything else. But there was a point in time when we had server-side rendering was a much bigger deal. And so some of those mechanisms were hidden from the user. So yeah, you didn't know exactly all the things that happened. With Ethereum, you know, you get the entire kind of breadth of the capabilities by looking at the contract. So I see the internet kind of moving onto the blockchain. So instead of having HTTPS, you just have whatever protocols are driving the content out of the blockchain to users. And you already know it's legit because, you know, HTTPS is to help you feel confident that you're on a site that's protected, right? Well, with the blockchain, everything is protected already. So you're going to have that guarantee that what you're seeing is what you're supposed to see.
Very interesting. I
was exactly going to ask that question. Like, one of the first things that could go through a blockchain is these secure certificates, right? Because it's almost the same principle.
Mm-hmm.
Like something that must be unique, something that must be validated by many others, mm-hmm. and something that is legit.
Yep.
So that will be like probably the first of the blockchain applications worldwide.
Yeah.
For the common people, which is us, people yeah. who is not interested in blockchain and stuff. Okay, another question, which is related to the last one. Right now, almost all the coins are tied to something material or something financial, some currency or whatever. Like, in order for a coin to have value, usually they are tied to dollars or they are tied to the speculative price that because of offer and demand and stuff. But do you know any of other applications that make an electronic coin valuable related to something tangible that is not going to change its value? Like in this case, it could be an HTTPS certificate or something.
Yeah. So there's like I talked about Helium. So Helium is one that is tied to, you know, the performance of these devices, right? These routers. So based upon the performance of the router and the position, the geolocation of them to provide internet access to IoT devices and, you know, soon it'll be internet in general, they get rewarded, right? The coins are rewarded. So there's a correlation there between consumption of the internet from a physical device and your ability to profit from it, right? There's also interesting coins out there like Audius. Audius, its main thing is related to your participation within the internet. So, you know, Bing has, I don't know if you guys know about Bing, but, you know, Bing being a search engine and competing with Google, it has a couple of projects to try and incentivize people to use Bing. One of them is that it pays you, you know, based on how many searches you do kind of thing on Bing. So you do more searches and it gives you like these credits or whatever. And then you can use the credits to do something else. So Audius is not too far from that. It's more along the lines of, and it's tied to the Brave browser. So if you're using Brave browser, you can do it that way. So you'll watch a video or an advertisement and you'll get credits for watching it. You know, so that's a coin that's related to your physical time being used to spend watching that advertisement. And then later you can use those tokens that you get for watching advertisement to buy something. Like, I want to buy a movie, you know, or I want to buy it's like Amazon Prime kind of thing, you know, where all of a sudden the amount of time you spend watching advertisement or anything else becomes a monetary capability of that specific coin.
Yeah, okay. I'm using something that is not attached to Bitcoin, but I use a search engine called Ecosia, which is an European ONG that they monetize all the apps. And as this company is a non-profit organization, they plant trees using from the ads. So as this company is a non-profit organization, they have a cap of income that they receive only to pay salaries. And all of the remaining money that they receive from ads, they use it for planting trees or overseas.
Right, right.
Uh-huh. In many places. So that's like a similar application, right? Like the Brave and stuff, that they pay you for using your time, and that money is not going anywhere but yours.
Yeah, the difference is that the algorithms or the mechanisms for distribution are completely visible to the public. That's the biggest difference, right? Whereas if you get these nonprofit organizations being around for a while, you don't know how they make decisions, right? You just assume that, you know, what they said they're going to do is what they're going to do, but you don't know the actual steps they take before that action takes place. Whereas with the blockchain, all of that stuff is readable. You can read all of it. So you know exactly how it's going to happen down to the penny.
So it's like a transparent ledger.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's like, you know, you're going to see a lot of copies, right? You're going to see a lot of things that already exist in the real world move to the blockchain just because of that. Just because now we have this level of transparency that wasn't even possible before.
So the world that offers the blockchain is like probably the first time that we will see something totally not human transactions being made, not human transactions.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because in every other aspect, even in science or even in the banking system or whatever, everything is human, and it ends up in a trust relationship from one people to another.
Right.
So this one
or corrupt, right?
Or I mean, corrupt, yeah.
Yeah.
It ends up everything is at the end of the chain, of the human chain.
Yeah.
It's just the word from someone to the other one, and that's it.
Yeah. Exactly. So
in the blockchain, it's like the first time we will have a system that is totally not human.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, we're definitely, that's the kind of interesting part. There's two pieces to it. One is the massive capabilities of a non-human being able to process the different steps that traditional systems need, right? And then the other part is the transparency, the creation. You're creating trust through transparency, because you don't need to trust somebody anymore. You can actually just go read it.
I think I finally understood why it's so difficult to explain the blockchain, because it's something that is not human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely, The only thing that's really human about it is the team that's working on any specific blockchain that you might be interested in. So you might want to understand, you know, how these decisions were made before it's added to the mechanisms of the blockchain. And to that degree, you might have an opinion, right, on one blockchain or the other, depending on who's working on it. You know, and that's why you get some politicization of different blockchains. Like, people talk about Cardano versus Polkadot, and, you know, Ethereum, it all started with Ethereum. And when Ethereum became a foundation nonprofit, Charles, which started Cardano, left Ethereum. And I think it's Gavin, I can't remember his name, left Ethereum and started Polkadot. But the real genius is really Gavin. But the political guy who talks a lot doesn't seem to do much is Charles, who's Cardano or ADA.
But what would be the main differences? Why did they branch out from?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of limitations. there was a lot of limitations with the Ethereum blockchain and their ability to come to a consensus as a human group. I think they're all challenged by that. They couldn't seem to move changes fast enough, and each one thought that they could do it better, right? That they could build a team that would be more effective in coming up with solutions that made more sense. And that's how Cardano started, and that's how Polkadot really started.
Okay. Well, we're very close to finishing up our talk, our chat. Really interesting stuff. Maybe we should have like a part two and three. And yeah, I know there's a lot of components, you know, different components like the smart contracts, or the multi-signature mm-hmm. wallets. There's a lot of stuff going on that I'm still trying to understand.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when it comes to contracts, like I said, once you get interested and you want to get into it, it's available to anybody. You can just go start looking up. You know, an Etherscan is a site you can go to, and you can look at all the contracts, and you can find the one with the biggest amount of money, you know, because a contract is also an address. An address can be like, is basically a wallet. So contracts can hold money. So you can go and see, like, the other day I ran into one that had $32 million in a contract, you know, it's tied to a project, obviously. And and then you can start reading the code and trying to figure out what the hell they're doing, you know.
Who are the like top five crypto or blockchain projects that you think are the coolest right now?
I really like Thorchain. It's not the top, you know, but I think Thorchain's got a interesting concept of being able to do swap between coins, but without wrapping it like SushiSwap or Uniswap does. You know, outside of that, I like Polkadot, and partly because, you know, I think you've got a team that's actually going to create a lot of new functionality. Still like Ethereum. I think, you know, they're not exactly very fast paced, but they're making good decisions. You know, it looks like their decisions are pretty good. Solana is pretty cool, but the problem with Solana is it made a decision, right? For it to do hundreds of thousands of transactions per second, the decision was to have some of its network centralized. So it's kind of like cheating. So, you know, it's like, I like it, but I don't like it. Like, you know, but, you know, like we were talking about earlier, you kind of almost need that to be able to have those capabilities until you figure out, you know, the next step or the next evolution in some of these level one blockchains.
Cool. Yeah, but it does sounds like cheating.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's trying to do what it can. Another one that I think is interesting, some people don't like it very much, is Filecoin. Filecoin is using the IPSF, the Interplanetary File System, you know, which is the blockchain that lets you store files, and then people that participate, they give up certain amount of their hard disk space. Well, with Filecoin, it's a coin that backs that up to try and incentivize people to do more of that. You know, let's see what else. And a lot of projects, they use the IPFS to, like, for example, I talked about Audius earlier. They use IPFS for their audio and video files, you know, and for the most part, IPFS is very close to something like we talked about before, like Kazaa or Morpheus or Napster or something, you know. Let me see what else.
You said five. You can keep on going.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think you said five.
Yeah, more. He has
six. I like Tezos, but, you know, it's sort of like at this point, it's a little bit on the back burner. I would say lower on the end, but I like the approach Tezos was taking, where it was trying to make sure that it didn't need to do any hard forks. There's a whole other, we could do one of these sessions just on hard forks.
I guess you mentioned the importance or the likeness of these coins based on usability, right? As a platform, like seeing this change as a platform, right? Mm-hmm. And there is this other way to interpret the electronic coins, which is how much is good to invest from any people in them, like just speaking about money. And when most of the people are using these kind of coins only to invest in them in order to get a money return, how is your opinion on that? That most of the coins are just used in order to speculate and get money back.
I think that there's a shallow, there's a very shallow audience, like you're saying, that's only looking at the first layer of cryptocurrencies, right? The first layer being financial, because you can see in many cases immediate returns, immediate capabilities of earning profit. I mean, if you look at Bitcoin, right, which is the biggest one, the one's been around longest, Bitcoin on average is 192% money back on your investment. I mean, there's no other asset on the planet that gives you that kind of return, right? Just this year alone, in February, it was up to a 682% return on investment. You know, like, where are you going to get that kind of return on investment? It's pretty amazing. However, and also it attracts people looking for those kind of investments. That's why we see like the whole thing with Elon Musk, and we have these other companies that are putting more and more of their money, which makes sense. You know, for long term, it might go down a little bit, but over, if you look historically, it never goes to its previous bottom, right? It always goes up. It's a kind of a historical map that you can use, that you know that this thing's going to hit 1.2 million at some point, you know? If you just have to just move the historical charts up, you'll see it, you know, it's going to be crazy valuation. However, there's a good and bad to that. The bad is a lot of people get burnt that don't really understand what they're investing in, right? And then the good is that there's a lot of money being pushed into this kind of innovation, whereas the internet might have taken a decade for it to really catch on. You know, the internet came out, it took about a decade for it to catch on. And there wasn't really that as much financial incentives or financial tools for people to get involved in the internet. You know, for the most part, people are like, oh, that looks like a cool project. And then when it made an IPO on the stock exchange, people could then get involved. But in most cases, people weren't able to get right in during the initial IPO, right? They had to wait till it's coming in. And at that point, people were like, oh, it's time to get out.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the reason we waited like 20 years to get Amazon.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. So, you know, from that perspective, I think it's a blessing, you know, because you've got so much money pumping into the crypto market. It's just, you know, putting this thing on steroids. This innovation is coming because there's so much money in it right now. It's an insane amount of money that's getting pumped into this. So it's like, instead of having just one boiling pot of technology, you've got, you know, thousands of boiling pots of technology that are all trying to figure out how to innovate as fast as they possibly can. And of course, you're going to get some, you know, projects that aren't, you know, all the, you know, they're not valid adjectives to be used for coins, you know, like shit coins.
Like 2 weeks ago, the president of El Salvador offered the huge hydroelectric substation only for bitcoins. Like the whole hydroelectric or geothermic electric station.
He's trying to attract
Bitcoin mining.
Yeah, that's trying to attract Bitcoin money to the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I mean, to me, that kind of makes sense, right? I mean, in El Salvador, they're making it so that it becomes a legal tender. In that case, you don't have to pay for taxes anymore on it, which is amazing.
I think that's his bet to become the new Switzerland.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, he's doing a good job. because he's going to attract a lot of attention.
Yeah, that takes a lot of balls, but yeah, it's actually a smart move. It might work out well for him.
Well, they said that I think the number is around like 80% of El Salvadorans don't own a bank account. So yeah, yeah.
That's another thing. Like Latin America, there's a lot of people that don't trust banks, don't want to have a bank account.
So that makes it even easier for cryptocurrencies to come in, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, super interesting.
Amazing. I have learned a lot hearing you, man.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to invite you, Robert, because I knew you would help us get more confused. I mean, get, you know, have more clarity on what's going on.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've spent a little bit of time researching this stuff. I'm very interested in it, you know, and some people help me as well. They tell me stuff that I don't pay attention to. Like, I still can't get on Discord. I still can't get on Telegram. I still can't. Some of these applications where everybody's at and talking all the time, even Twitter. I really don't like Twitter, but I'm going to have to get into it now. So
I'm a Twitter master, man.
There you go. That's where all the crypto guys are at. They're all in Twitter. So, yeah.
Cool. I think I need to wrap this up.
All right.
Thanks a lot for your time, Robert. I don't know if anyone has a last question, but I think we're done.
Thank you, man. Yeah. Just the final comment is like, you're the first guy I hear about the usability of the blockchain, not only speaking about money. So yeah. It's like the first time that someone speaks about
that's the awesome. Blockchain about and everything. Well, next time I'll show you how to make your own domain on the blockchain.
Amazing.
That'll be cool.
Great. Yeah.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot for your time. Uriel, Serino, Robert, have a great afternoon.
Cheers. Bye.
Cheers.
Bye. Goodbye.